The Volume.
This is Prime Cuts, the best of the Colin Coward podcast. This week, some strong interviews. Steve Smith Sr. with his take on Julian Edelman's Hall of Fame resume and his brutally honest take on how he approaches relationships in the NFL. Drew Rosenhaus, not only unbelievable stories, but tells us how the college football landscape is about to change in a big way. Finally, John Middlecoff, full of info, weighs in on the Niners' questionable plans to draft Mac Jones. All right, I'm going to bring on Steve Smith Sr., 15 years, 5 Pro Bowls. We'll talk some football, his appreciation for Julian Edelman. Interesting cat, Steve Smith joins us. Listen, when I think of you, I think you're a Hall of Famer, and what I think about you and appreciate is you're tough. And I made an argument for Edelman this week, and I said, listen, man, there's got to be more than one way to the Hall of Fame. I said, Jason Garrett has a higher winning percentage than Jimmy Johnson. Who's the better coach? And I said, Sandy Koufax only had 3 great years, but he was the best pitcher in the history of the game for 3 years. Mariano Rivera only has 82 wins, but the Yankees don't get a World Series with Joe Torre if he doesn't pitch the last outs. And so I look at Edelman and I say, okay, his numbers don't stack like Calvin Johnson, but when you played for the Patriots, Steve, there are no junkyards, because with 7 minutes to go, you lead and you're asked to block. You know, the Atlanta receivers trail. Shit, it's nothing but junkyards the last 7 minutes and 9, 10, 12 games a year. So Edelman's toughness and ability to be great in big games means a ton to me.
Yeah.
I think of you similarly. You were better in big games. You were a physical presence. You would block. That's my argument for Edelman. You know there's guys in this league that are going to make the Hall of Fame, and you and I know they didn't like to block. They disappeared in big spots. You know, they used to say that about basketball players. Some basketball players hide from the ball with about 3 minutes left. LeBron doesn't. Kobe did. But a lot of guys hide from the ball. Now, Edelman's numbers are not yours. They're not great. But how do you look at Edelman as a guy that played in this league at a high level, was a Pro Bowler 5 times?
You know, it's funny you say this, because, you know, when they ask me, or when guys like you ask me, I am caught in the middle, which is very rare for me. Usually I'm either over here or over there. I'm rarely in the middle. And I'm caught in the middle is because, one, I respect the heck out of Edelman. I love his game. I love what he does. He goes in there. He's a technician. You know, he has benefited from where he played, but here's the problem. He wasn't given that position. He earned it by working his way through. He mastered his craft. He used to be a quarterback. Not everybody can go from quarterback to wide receiver. Not everybody can go from wide receiver to corner. Right? Not everybody can play corner and be a successful wide receiver. So with all that, understanding his body of work, what I really like about Edelman, which a lot of times people don't want to really talk about, which is, you know, we talk about some of these players in the league. We talk about what they did in the playoffs. But then they say, well, a guy didn't do that much in the regular season. And I agree. But then we talk about guys who have had a fantastic regular season. And unfortunately, not to their fault or their detriment, they never got an opportunity to play in the playoffs. But then what about the guys who have played in the playoffs and didn't show up, right? And so when I look at Edelman, I just look at him from what I know and what I respect of wide receivers. And I respect them all. Now, I don't agree all of them are great. I don't believe all of them are Hall of Famers. I don't believe some of the whoever's are the top echelon that are on the laundry list of greats. I'm not going to say that this guy is better than that guy, but there are some guys where I'm like, okay, right? Because I am supposed to respect my elders, and I shall respect my elders. But then I also look at Edelman and I go, I love his numbers, and I love what he did when it counted the most. what you do in the regular season just builds you up to when you hit the playoffs. Man, you're in a groove. And Edelman was always that guy you can count on.
You know Carolina really well.
Some days I do.
I actually think Darnold fits Matt Rhule and Brady, Robbie Anderson. They want to be more of a big play offense, throw it down the field. Teddy's not a big arm guy. Sam's bigger, stronger, more athletic. He's more of a risk taker. I think it works. To what level, I don't know. But I would argue, I think Carolina's offensive talent outside of left tackle, it's pretty good. I think DJ Moore's a pretty good player. So, I mean, I'm sure you watched Carolina last year. Can they be viable? Can Darnold fit quickly? Will is it a system you can learn quickly with Matt Rhule and Brady?
Well, what I love about why I think it's a good fit is because, let's be honest, people are like, man, I don't see it. I don't understand why you bring in Sam Darnold. That's stupid. The problem is it fair to evaluate a quarterback that's on a team who is trying to get themselves together? The young man has been under duress from day one. It's not fair to him, right? You know, quarterbacks are one of these things. Quarterbacks, when winning, quarterbacks get all the glory. And when losing, to a certain extent, you know, sometimes they want to place blame. But my blame is not the players. It's, look how good Robbie Anderson has looked here in Carolina versus what he looked like with the Jets. I want to see what Sam Darnold can do when he has time and not under duress. We have never seen a quarterback perform well under pressure, under duress. Probably one of the best young talents we got out here. And we just saw him play in the Super Bowl where he did not accumulate 497 yards. That's how many yards he ran around for his life in the Super Bowl.
Patrick Mahomes
in losing. So he did not accumulate 497 yards rushing. No, that's how many yards he ran around for his life, right? And that says something. So if Patrick Mahomes is not effective under duress, why in the Sam Darnold is he going to be effective under duress? How are you going to say go five-step drop and three steps into your five-step drop? You're getting suplexed, and this is not WWE SmackDown.
You've actually been really honest about shit. When you played, you said you struggled sometimes with depression.
Yeah.
Most guys don't want to talk about that. And so you had some personal battles. And I don't know if it's a family history. I've had people in my family that have struggled with that. You would think you're great, good looking guy, smart, successful.
Appreciate that. Yeah. So now that you're working out and looking a little fitter, you can tell the handsomeness of me. I like it.
But it's interesting because I wouldn't think. I mean, you were always a guy that was just resilient, tough, making catches, Pro Bowls. When did you, honestly, Steve, was there a moment for you, an epiphany, when you're like, I need to see a therapist? There's something I can't get my arms around by myself.
Well, what happened was back in 2003, I had already had a sports psychologist, a guy who was working with golf players. And so I already had a sports psychologist that I was working with. So visualization was always there, daily goals, monthly goals, short term, long term, had all that stuff already mapped out and went through that. Had a whole routine. Looking at my film as data with no emotions. Right. I had all that stuff and it was built in me. But I struggled because I was so geared towards data, P&L, profit or loss. Was I creating enough passive income for my family by playing? So when I'm done playing, I can sit back and enjoy life. Right. So my mind was always going. I was either always on or always off. Right. And so and just having that pressure. Right. And so for me, what happened is I didn't know and didn't realize the pressure I was putting on myself. It was causing me to not really enjoy the journey. because of the way I was raised and what I went through and what I experienced, right? And it's something that I just connected the dots with is by the age of 18, I felt pretty insignificant. It was in me, I felt already insignificant. So for me, playing ball was me playing ball. I always wanted to play ball. But outside of playing ball, I was always trying to figure things out. Things didn't always equal up or make sense. So, I struggled with that. And then you add not addressing it, you playing ball, keep suppressing it. And I just struggled with it. And so when I started doing counseling, when I stopped doing counseling on the sports and I just started doing counseling on figuring things out, I started going backwards and I was going, oh, because I was always uptight. Right. And, I remember when I tore my Achilles in Baltimore, and I'm on, the medication from the surgery. And man, I remember, and I woke up like in the middle of the night. And I remember saying, man, if I would have just caught these passes. And, when you have after surgery, you're always kind of that medicine does some stuff to you.
Right.
And I remember I was able to recite when I woke up in the middle of the night, I was able to recite every ball that I dropped. And if I didn't drop that ball, I wouldn't be playing right now. I would not be playing right now. That means I would not have torn my Achilles because I would have had those 1,000 receptions.
So you were just eating yourself up.
In the hospital room. And if I would have got those 1,000 receptions, I would have quit playing last year, the year before. And so then I wouldn't, you see what I'm saying? And so I just went down a rabbit hole. And the medication I was on, it had me just like, I was like, I mean, if this is the memories and all, I was just like, I was in it. I mean, way out. I got a dog, but have you ever seen a dog digging in the dirt? That's where I was. I was digging through the dirt and the mess, and I was getting filthy inside my head, inside my heart of where I was. And I was just like, man, this ain't good. And so that's why when I stepped away really my 16th year, I was like, man, I didn't want to go play for another team. I didn't want to keep, being away. This year I'm in Baltimore for 3 years and I go play 2 years somewhere else and play maybe another year. And I was like, man, decide what you're going to do. And so that's one of the reasons why. And that's what I was able to figure out. And so it was like, did I want to play? Yeah. But wanting to play and understanding I needed to stop playing, that was more important.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
Miss what?
Just do you miss the camaraderie, the dudes?
Not really. Because here's the thing. I made myself unapproachable to where I had this guard up where I didn't want friends. Because I was here to do one thing, is play ball. I wasn't here to be your friend. Because when I turned it on the light switch and I played ball and go against defenders, I don't give a fuck about your family. I don't care how your wife and his kids are doing. I'm here to kick your ass. Bottom line.
Yeah.
And so having that, and then when I got to Baltimore, I realized, man, just slow down a little bit. And so that's where it wasn't Baltimore was such a significantly better place. I was in a better mind frame. Justin Forsett, great guy. Anthony Levine, great guy. Thomas Davis, great guy. Mike Tolbert, great guy. I mean, so many great, fantastic players that I played with, but I didn't appreciate or make them feel appreciated because I was just so focused on kicking ass and taking names that I was tough to be around. But I was okay being alone because alone fed into the anger of playing ball the way I played.
You know those hot takes you post on social media? Well, now you can win up to $5,000 when you put those takes to the test on FanDuel. It's a new game called Over Under, and it's absolutely free to play on FanDuel. Here's how it works. FanDuel will set lines on things like total points or three-pointers made during every NBA on TNT broadcast. All you have to do is pick over or under for every prop. Your picks could win you a share of $5,000 during every contest. FanDuel's the exclusive home for Over Under, and it's available in all 50 states, so you can play from anywhere. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/OverUnder and sign up now if you have not done so already. You create a new FanDuel account if you don't already have one. It takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. Then put your takes to the test during every NBA on TNT broadcast at FanDuel.com/OverUnder. They could be worth up to $5,000. Age and location restrictions apply. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions. His name is Drew Rosenhaus. I would classify him as a super agent, the founder of Rosenhaus Sports Representation. More than 30 years as a sports agent, and he still looks good. Yeah, in 1989, at the age of 22 years old, and I'll be honest, I was a little bit of a cynic. Good-looking guy, slick, Miami. But I kept talking to people, and they're like, no, Drew's great. Remember, I had a conversation with Rich McKay one time. He's like, he gets right to it. There's no bullshit. Drew and I, our conversations are 8 to 10 minutes. I wish there were 10 Drew Rosenhauses. I am no longer a cynic, but a fan, and he's joining us now. It is funny, though. When you first came out, I was like, boy, this guy, he's fast talking. Did you sense, Drew, you were so different than the classic older model that you, a lot of people, you got some blowback. Did you sense it?
Oh, yeah. You know, I intentionally try to be different, Colin. It was a very competitive business when I broke in 1988. I was 22 years old. I was a second year law student from Duke University School of Law. And it was an established industry. It wasn't as balanced as it is today. It was really dominated by a handful of agents at that time. And I figured for me to make a name for myself, I had to be different. In those days, I was certainly brash. I did use the media to my advantage. And it did make quite a few enemies in the agent business. At one time, I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, known as the most hated man in pro football. But listen, that was good for business. And quite frankly, just being in the eye of the media early on established me as a known commodity. And being based here in South Florida, I was able to really capitalize on all the terrific players down here.
Who was the first established agent that wasn't an enemy, that put his arm around you, that actually reached out? And that probably took a while, but was there one or two guys that reached out in the first? There were not a one?
There still aren't any. Just the guys who work with me. My brother Jason, Robert Bailey, Ryan Matha are the only agents that I consider to be friends. This is such a hyper competitive business, Colin, that I probably have had a client leave all the top agents to come to me, and I probably have had a client that's left me to sign with another of the top agents. It's just, it's a war zone out there. The recruiting is very cutthroat, and there really isn't much margin for friendship among your competitors. It's really unique because there's no second place. There's nothing for runner-up. I mean, you know, you could beat out 100 agents and finish number two to get a player. And that means absolutely buckets. I mean, you know, zero, nothing. I can tell you as a result of that, it's a highly competitive business, and you're out to beat the competitive agents, and you really don't have time. It's not beneficial to be friendly with the guys that that you're competing with.
Give me an incident since 1989 in the draft where your phone rings right before a pick. Has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with Willis McGahee He was a young man who blew his knee out in the college national championship game, the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. And he was on the draft. And Colin, quite frankly, there wasn't a lot of calls for Willis in the early to mid portion of the first round, and ESPN kept flashing him. So I decided the next time they flashed him on TV, instead of him sitting there looking bored, waiting for the phone to ring, I would call him so it looked like he was on the phone with teams. So I called from my cell phone. I call Willis. We're talking to each other. Willis is on the phone. All of a sudden, my call waiting goes through, and it's the Buffalo Bills. And at that time, the Bills were curious who Willis was talking to. And I wouldn't tell them who he was talking to. I just said, you know, use your imagination. And they assumed it was another team. And they decided that if he was on the phone with another club, there was a good chance he was going to be picked. And not long after I spoke to them, they drafted Willis. So believe it or not, I think that had something to do with them taking him. You want to create the impression at all times that your client's about to get selected. This is about to blow up, though, Colin. We're about to go into a whole new world in college football with agents and marketing people. And it's called NIL, Name, Image, and Likeness.
Yeah.
In the state of Florida, on July 1st, Florida passed a law that college athletes can begin to enter into endorsement agreements and have marketing deals based on their name, image, and likeness. So college players are going to be able to make money. They're going to be able to do deals with marketing agents. Agents like myself are going to be able to go out and procure marketing deals for players. So this has been passed in Florida. The NCAA hasn't ruled on this yet, or they don't have a formal ruling, but it's coming, and it's coming soon, and it's going to change the whole dynamics of college football, because it's inevitable that college players are going to be able to make money and deal with agents and have endorsement deals. So get ready. College football and amateurism is going to become professional football.
Well, conservative governors tend to be more pro-business. So Florida, DeSantis, he's going to pass this puppy. California, Gavin Newsom. California, just frankly, you know, as an attorney, has more regulations all through our government. So we know Florida is going to open it up. Where's Texas at? Where's California at on that stuff?
Really, Florida and New Mexico are the only states, to my knowledge, that have formally passed the law. But there are quite a few other states that I've heard that are on the verge of doing the same. And I'm following this very closely, because when it is permissible, we're going to be, you know, getting after it. We're going to recruit all of the top college players with marketing deals. And this is going to be the wave of the future. Every top college player is going to be inundated with marketing opportunities from agents like myself. And so colleges and universities are going to have to deal with that. And college football is going to be very different moving forward. And the colleges are going to have to embrace the NIL, because they're going to need to use it in recruiting. If a program has alumni that can bring endorsement deals to players, they're going to get a lot more deals than for players in, say, a program that doesn't have a relationship with alumni that have endorsement deals. It's really going to take off.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I'm Stanford, and I know that's not a football powerhouse, but hell, half their graduates work at Apple and Google and YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I think about that, and I think Apple has a lot of Pac-12 graduates inside their company. And I would, if I was Apple, I'd think, yeah, just go take care of Stanford players. I mean, would there be anything outlawing that?
Nope. Not that I'm aware of. And I mean, you look at the University of Central Florida, you know what's on the back of the players' jerseys now? It's not their names. It's their Twitter handle. It's their Twitter name. And that's brilliant, because that is the world that we are about to enter. Get ready for college football and their players to make money. And, you know, the top guys are going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the best players are going to start to really rack up the money, and hey, I've been an agent for 33 years, and I've said from day one, college players should absolutely be able to make money on endorsements, and that time has finally arrived, and it's going to be official in a matter of months.
Anybody ever break your heart? Just break your heart. You lost a client.
Oh, yeah. Many times. I mentioned Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin was the guy that that helped me get started in this business. And I was his agent early in his career. I was a very young agent. And I was in my early 20s. And he was with the Dallas Cowboys. And he became a Pro Bowl player. And he decided to let his young agent go to hire a veteran agent that was prominent in Dallas who could get him a lot more contracts. And that was devastating for me. I couldn't figure that out because, you know, I've always been about, you know, your clients are your friends. There's that bond, right, like Jerry Maguire. And it was business for Michael. And that broke my heart. But I grew up quite a bit and realized that this is a business as well. But that was a tough one.
Yeah. God. And you were what, 25, 26?
Yeah, exactly. Very young in my career. Never lost a client before. That was a real eye opener. I didn't think it was possible. That was a shot right to the groin. But, you know, Michael Irvin was always a great advocate for mine, even after that. And we've maintained a great relationship to this day. And I'll always be grateful for him. But, Michael, if you're listening, you broke my heart, buddy.
What's tougher, a girl breaking up with your Michael Irvin?
Well, that's a good one. I would have to say Michael Irvin because, you know, for me, I was a bachelor for a long time. Growing up in Miami, I didn't get married till my mid-40s. Didn't have children until 5 years ago, so I was a little bit of a playboy at the University of Miami. So if a girl broke up with me, you could find another one. But there weren't many Michael Irvins. And he was a Pro Bowl MVP wide receiver. So that was much tougher than any girlfriend that broke up with me.
Yeah,
I bounced back pretty quickly with the girls in my day.
All right, let's bring on my buddy, John Middlecoff, former NFL scout. Knows his shit. That's why I bring him on. So I was told this weekend, and it is shocking. I have said this. We got five quarterbacks that are going in the first round. My prediction is the two that will be successful, Trevor Lawrence and whoever the Niners take.
Yeah.
I've been told, and I was a denier, they're taking Mac Jones. And it wouldn't be who I would take, but I do think he will be somewhat successful because it's a perfect situation. Now, do I think, you know, the other guys could be more successful? Well, but we'll never know, right? It's like you don't know the president you don't elect. You don't know how it would have been, right? Better or worse.
The girl you don't date, whatever. Yeah, you have no clue.
Right, right. So I do think Mac Jones, because it's perfect, will have some success. I don't see Super Bowl success, but you're in the Bay Area. A source I trust now says it is an 80-20 Mac Jones lead.
Well, I just want to start with this. He is known as the guy with the highest floor of that group of Trey Lance, of Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. There's no such thing as a high floor for a quarterback prospect unless you're like Andrew Luck, maybe Trevor Lawrence, right? The bust potential on quarterbacks is really high because most of them, it typically is intangible, right? It's his work ethic, his ability to process, his ability to handle the pressure that comes at being drafted number three. And then on top of that, if you don't have great physical tools, with Mac by far has the least physical, the best, you know, if you just rank the physical skill set of the top five guys, he's the bottom. And I don't think it's really close. I actually think, Colin, they're going to take Trey Lance. I talked to an NFL exec this week who thought when you watch Trey Lance, the things he does well, throw on the move, physically what Kyle's talked about are big, high-end athletes. If you had your choice, he went on record a couple weeks ago when they made the trade and said, if you could choose, which we kind of can now, you ideally always take the bigger, faster, stronger guy. And if you look at the guys on Kyle's teams, even historically that they've had success with, Julio Jones, Trent Williams, who the Shanahans drafted, then he brought back. Trent Williams is 6'6", 330 pounds, runs like a running back, took a year off, came back, made a Pro Bowl. Like, those are, Kyle Shanahan is known for this. Kirk Cousins was a fourth-round pick. They just mortgaged the entire future, picked 12, two other first-rounders. That would be like taking your entire life savings and then just investing it into like a pretty safe ETF, right? Usually when you take your entire life savings, you would take a pretty big risk on something. Like it's to take a pretty bold move if you're going to take all the money and make the move and let it, instead of just letting it sit there. Because I would say Mac Jones, every single year there are Mac Jones in the second and third round. And if you got right. Kyle Shanahan, wouldn't you just use that value to do that? They did try to do that 3-4 years ago with C.J. Beathard, a plug-and-play pro-style quarterback from Iowa, high floor. Colin, he was terrible. So to me, the more I've talked just to different people in the league, if you read what Kyle has actually and listen to what Kyle's actually said, now that doesn't mean anything at this time of year. People lie. To me, Trey Lance, high-character guy, represented by Tom Condon, who represents the Mannings, the Breezes, the Staffords, all the high-level guys, is only 20 years old, who is just this raw product you have a lot to work with. If you are going to keep Jimmy, which, again, they might be lying, but if they truly you take him at their word, they would keep him. Wouldn't Trey Lance be the guy that you kind of work with, keep behind Jimmy for a year, see how it goes? He's only started a year. You don't know how he's going to look. Because if you take Mac Jones, if they do that, which I definitely think is a possibility, I think he has to start. You can't take the highest floor guy and then have him sit for a year. What the hell are we doing, right? That guy would have to play immediately if you take Mac Jones. If you take Trey Lance, you can justify it to people. I think if you take Mac Jones, for everything Kyle has built around here, and he has a lot of equity, people think very, very highly of him. Even though when you look, he's only had one successful season. But if you watch him every week, and last year they won 6 games, he was fantastic. He was excellent given how many injuries they had, how Jimmy disappeared for all these games. I think he would lose a lot of that the moment he took Mac Jones. Now, ultimately on draft night, nothing doesn't mean anything. You win games, no one will care. But I think people would question. I think it would be one of the most arrogant picks in the history of the league.
At The Volume Sports, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram. Please rate, review, subscribe. We love doing this. We're just starting. Check us out.
Volume.